It's here and now. The Strokkr Geyser in Iceland's Haukadalur Valley is one of the world's most active, erupting every 10 minutes or so, sending plumes of steaming hot water high in the air.
That was cool.
We're here to see firsthand how climate change is impacting this tiny island nation and how they're fighting back with their natural resources. The geysers are propelled by underground magma, an intense heat source close to the Earth's surface. All over Iceland, you can spot steam rising from vents in the earth. At the geyser, streams of steaming hot water run by walkways that warn, "Don't touch."
Is it hot?
Yeah.
This is the heat source that Iceland's geothermal plants tap into to generate the power that heats water and homes. Then there's the sleekly modern Hellasheide plant sitting on a bleak black volcanic plain half an hour outside the capital Reykjavik. We're hearing the generators that power huge turbines as the underground water flows through them. One hint, you can smell the water.
That smell, is that the sulfur?
Yes, this is the hydrogen sulfur.
These plants are clean energy, but they do produce some carbon dioxide, and that's what's exciting at this plant. In a project called CarbFix, young scientists capturing that CO2 and injecting it into basalt rock. This is carbon capture and injection. It's been done before, but usually the CO2 eventually leaks out. Not here. We'll explain. It's a windy, rainy day, so in hard hats and protective gear, we take a car tour of the grounds with Carrie Helgeson, the project's manager.
This is the little one, yes. Our Arctic fox, yes.
He's gesturing at what looks like a moonscape and a small prototype carbon injection station made in Switzerland. They've got a more advanced version. That's what we're heading for. Also with us, geoscientist Sandra Snæbjørnsdóttir, who agrees the building looks like an outhouse.
Yes, so they call it the Arctic fox, but we call it tiny.
So this captures 50 tons a year.
That is Andre Magnusson, Iceland's premier environmentalist. He's also a poet, a cultural icon. He's thrilled by the work here, but points out that this Swiss station is tiny in many ways.
To get 1,000 gigatons out of the atmosphere, we have to scale this up not 1 million times, but 1 billion times.
If you fly to Europe and back, it will take this unit about a week to offset your emissions.
Which, again, is why there's so much excitement around the world about what we're about to see. The newer CarbFix injection wells, they can capture 1,000 times more emissions. And if they run at that capacity, Andre says with a wry smile.
Then we have solved the climate crisis.
We ask scientist Carrie Helgeson about the rocks we're walking on.
This black pebbled rock beach, This is all the volcanic rock?
This is all volcanic rock, yeah. So these are the types of rock that we're using. If you pick one up, for example, you can see that it's like a Swiss cheese. There's a lot of porosity and a lot of holes. So this is also what we have underground. This is what gives us the opportunity to put all this CO2 underground.
Carrie explains to us the basics of carbon injection strategy.
You need three things in order for this particular method to work. You need a lot of water, or it can be seawater. You need favorable rock formations, and you need a stream of CO2.
So, we get back in the car. It's all simple, except for one thing.
We are lacking the stream of CO2.
In other words, the process works, but these geothermal plants, again, are clean. And as Carrie tells Andre, his team is thirsty for more polluting emissions to inject into the rock.
We need to catch it where it flows from the chimneys. So
I've been talking to young people, and I tell them that if they go into your profession, you're only three of you guys now in the phone book, it's like if I went into computers before the internet. If we're going to scale this up a million times, that means millions of jobs that will be created.
And it will be scaled up. We know it's going to be scaled up. The question is, will it be scaled up enough?
If we don't scale it up, we're dead.
On that cheery note,
we're past the point in which we can simply just reduce our emissions.
So in the future, you will have like capturing equipment on chimneys of the world, and you might have like gas ships sailing to harbors where it will be pumped down with maybe seawater.
Finally, we see the buildings covering the wells.
Rising from the fog in front of us are these igloos. They look like geodesic domes in the middle of this black volcanic rock expanse.
We have retrofitted 2 out of these 17 wells to be able to receive gas. Now this is our main injection well, okay, which we call HN16. Okay. It's a very good well. One of my favorites.
Oh, okay.
Inside, a small room filled with large metal tubing.
So we have the geodesic dome above us now, around us, and inside we have this technology where... Just talk to us for a second now, the difference between this kind of work and work that we know about. So we saw the basalt rock that's formed by the volcanoes. It's different from sedimentary rock, where we know also there's been some injection. What's the difference?
The difference between basalts and sedimentary rocks are the reactivity of these rocks. So sedimentary rocks may originate from volcanics to begin with, then you know the softer material gets washed away and we have mostly silica left. This type of rock is not very reactive, but the rocks that we have here surrounding us, they contain about 25% of the metals that we need to combine with the CO2, turn it into stone. Instead of injecting just gas, which can migrate up, we kill the buoyancy by dissolving the CO2 into the water.
I guess that's the main concern about carbon capture and injection, mm-hmm, that might then later escape and still, yeah, be emissions. And you're saying this has proven, I mean, to prevent that.
Yeah, we dissolve the CO2 to kill the buoyancy, and this fluid has therefore the tendency to sink. But then with time, this fluid reacts with the rock, releases the metals that it needs to turn the CO2 into stone.
Sandra walks around the small room filled with pipes and valve wheels. One part looks like a ship periscope. One pipe bores through the floor and deep into the ground below.
So the injection is going on here. This is the well, and this well reaches 2,000 meters down. Through this pipe comes just regular water from the power plant, which we flow on the outside of a stainless steel pipe, which is this one. This one reaches down to about 800 meters. Within that pipe, we have the gas-saturated fluid.
On one windowsill, there's a piece of injected rock.
This is what it looks like. So this is a core that we retrieved from 500 meters depth.
Let's just describe it. It looks like
it's like a
rock.
Sponge, yeah.
And it has like speckles on it, like maybe you'd see on a black countertop with white speckles. What exactly is that we're looking at?
So the dark rock is just the basaltic rock. But then we have these white precipitates that are actually CO2 turned into stone.
That's the CO2 right there, the dots.
This is mineralized CO2.
Well, and Andre, as you say, just scale that up.
Actually, this plant, the problem with this plant is actually getting access to CO2. But if you have like a coal-fired power plant and it can fill a tank ship, then the hard work is over. And then you could pump that into basalt anywhere where you have that in the world. The 20th century made infrastructure. It made like sewage systems. It made road systems. So the infrastructure that the 21st century will make and has to be as big as sewage or road systems is CO2 removal.
And you're both nodding.
Yeah, I mean, around the world, industries and coal-emitting power plants will have to see if this method makes sense at their particular site. If not, then we can start thinking about transporting it to favorable rock formations, such as in Iceland.
This seems to be a real plausible solution, if this is scaled up properly, and the price of it also seems to be favorable. This can be one of the major contributors.
You know, up until now, it has been much cheaper just to do nothing than to do something about your emissions. But this seems to be changing, and this is predicted to change even more, that it will become more costly to emit the CO2 than to capture your emissions.
Taxes and things like that would, yeah, force the industry to do it.
In Europe, we have the European trading scheme where you can buy carbon quotas.
It's like cap and trade.
So the prices of these quotas have been rising, and now it's actually approximately the same price of doing this as for doing nothing.
We are really feeling it now that the industry is actually coming to us and asking about this process. So we can see the system is actually working.
Even though Iceland is perfect for this because the whole country is made of this rock, we can find big fields of basalt all over the world.
It lines the ocean floor, right?
It's actually the most common rock type on surface on Earth. So we have the know-how, and we have a lot of wells from like the search of oil and lots of unused wells that could be used for injecting. So the infrastructure is somewhat in place already.
So in other words, the infrastructure for fracking and oil transport can be used to take emissions to where they can be injected into basalt rock. We leave you with the words of poet and environmentalist Andre Magnusson.
When I talk to young people, I tell them, all your working life will be about this. And the spark in Sandra's eyes, like when she's talking about what they have accomplished and how that can be scaled up, this generation will really feel that everywhere they go, there is a higher purpose. Imagine somebody going into the trash business and having that spark in their eyes. You know, so we thought the future would be more distortion of Facebook and screen time. I think it's the opposite. I think we're going much more into rock, earth, sky, you know, tangible. That's where we're going.
So, this week we're covering the climate crisis from a country on the front lines, Iceland. Tomorrow, the impact on fishing. For incredible pictures, go to hereandnow.org.